everybody, and welcome to the Captain's Quarters, the unofficial Star Trek rewatch podcast. We are rewatching the entire Star Trek franchise, starting at the beginning of the official chronology. My name is Gabe, and I'm with my co-captain Jason. Make it so, Jason.
We also talk about other things too, but good. I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
We're a Star Wars podcast with a Star Trek problem.
Yeah.
Or is that right? A Star Trek podcast with a Star Wars problem?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, today we're talking about Star Trek Discovery.
Before we get started, what do you...
Oh, yes, LaCroix, as always.
What do you drink? Okay.
LaCroix, okay. Pure.
Pure,
blue,
okay.
Blue All screen right, nice. Is disappearing it, but...
Yeah, because it's the blue can.
Yeah. Yeah, so today we're talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 1, Episode 7, with another wacky name in keeping with the rest of this series. This one is called Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad.
Yeah.
Jason, last week I was lamenting that this series, the setting is this massive, allegedly, war with the Klingons. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't all of a sudden this sense of urgency just dropped away. Now we're just having jogs around Discovery.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they doubled down on this episode. So this episode starts with a kegger. They're having a disco on disco.
Yeah.
Right? A discotheque on disco.
Yep, definitely.
Tilly's wasted. Burnham joins the party. Her and Tyler have some chemistry.
Human emotions are completely illogical, especially these ones.
Exactly.
The need to party.
But my point being, if in fact there is this massive Klingon threat, like, what is happening right now? Have you ever watched a war movie where they just stop to have a rave?
Not a movie, but...
Or a show, for that matter? I mean...
MASH, right? I'm sure.
There you go. MASH.
MASH in 11 seasons, or however.
Yeah.
In, like, 30 seasons had...
Oh, yeah.
Like, a party or whatever
going on. So that's, like, the only example, though, right?
The Korean War. That's the only one I can think of, yeah.
I mean, what was the conflict in Stripes with Bill Murray? Because I think they actually have a battle at the end, right? So there's technically...
Well, I mean, that's during the Cold War.
Okay, yeah.
And, like, and that's the thing, though, because they steal the vehicle. The Hummer, the RV, basically.
Yeah.
The EM50.
Wow.
Thank you.
That is the memory right there, man.
So they steal it, right, and they take it out joyriding, and then the rest of the squad is now charged to go find them, right? Mm-hmm. The rest of the squadron, platoon.
Yeah.
But then they get captured by the, gonna date ourselves, Czechoslovakian Army, or the USSR at the time, right?
Okay.
But Czechoslovakia, and so the two guys, Bill Murray and Harold Ramis,
uh-huh.
Rest in
yep.
peace, have to go rescue them. So they have to break it. They have to sneak in to Czechoslovakia and, like, you know, rescue the rest of the platoon. And so the fight in that movie is just, you know, the Soviet local military, you know, army trying to defeat the Americans, trying, you know, escaping from being held prisoner.
Got it. Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
Not really a war going on, but the Cold War.
Okay.
I would guess.
All right. So, I mean, I think that's a point in favor of my argument, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That, you know, here it is, this war, and the Discovery is on the sidelines? guards? Being sidelined?
Even though, allegedly, again, they're the most important ship in the fleet.
Right.
Right. And again, I don't see... I don't have a problem with them having some R&R or...
Yeah.
A break in the action. I just need a line of dialogue that acknowledges... The setting that was very firmly established in the first two episodes.
I mean, Mud is trying to sell Discovery.
That's the only saving grace here. I agree.
Right? To the Klingons. And that's his whole thing, is that he's trying to get the Klingons to come on board.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know...
Yeah, so that's...
Take the ship.
That's the next part. So this okay. party is part of a temporal loop. And
yes.
There's this half hour that keeps replaying. It's Groundhog's Day, basically, on Disco. And it's caused by Mud. He has this crystal, and he's trying to figure out what Disco's top secret capability is, which we know is this mycelium-powered drive. So he infiltrates Disco via a... Gormagander,
yep.
Which is
the Star Trek Discovery version of the Pyrrol. The Star Wars one.
Oh yeah.
The Star Whale.
I almost said pergola, that's not right. I know what you're saying.
Oh, we're gonna get
Oh man.
I feel the Star Wars fans yelling at us already, like screaming into their like podcast. It's the hyperspace
whale. Yeah.
Yeah, the space whale, but there's a specific name. But
so yeah, these things are in danger. There's literal like codified protocol. If you see one, you have to take it in.
The Endangered Species Act is still a thing.
Yeah. You have to take it in. You have to save it. So they do that. So Mud, Dwight Schrute, played by Dwight Schrute, knows this. He hides.
Rainn Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah, Rainn Wilson.
Oh, is that his character? Oh, okay. Sorry.
Jason's pretending he doesn't know the U.S. office.
Huh?
I'm just kidding, man.
I don't.
It's all good, man. So he...
I don't. I'm the British one.
Sure it is, buddy. He hides in the Gormagander.
It's the first one.
It's true. It does have that claim to fame. Hides in the Gormagander. When they bring it on the ship, he jumps out. Dwight Schrute jumps out wearing an Ant-Man suit from Marvel. The first time he does it, he kills a bunch of people. Then he keeps rewinding the clock, and his goal is to... Because even though everything rewinds, he, from his perspective, he remembers everything he learns through his various journeys through Disco. And we know it's more than 50, because he tells us that he has killed Lorca 53 times or something.
Yeah. And, I love that sequence, by the way.
Yeah. The Lorca ones?
That, you know... Yeah. Yeah, the Lorca ones, where he just keeps going, poof, poof, poof. Yeah. Sends him out into space.
What do you think the point of that was? The almost, like, graphic, like, you know when people talk about, like, fantasizing about?
Yeah, so this was to hit home a point that Mud the bitterness of Mud being left on the Klingon ship by Lorca.
Yeah. And then when they were together in that cell, you told me that Mud is a recurring character. Was he always a murdering psychopath? Because I got the impression he was like a scoundrel.
No, I mean... another point that you're getting ahead of me, but I'm glad we're going there. Rainn Wilson brings a very dark twisted mud.
Okay.
To screen. And I think, even though I think this episode was supposed to be light and fun and comedic and in a science fiction way, right? Mm-hmm. It's a time loop and you get to see all these things happen over and over again. But at the same time, this mud is very dark and a little bit more Heath Ledger Joker, kind of mad psychopath, as you just said.
Yeah.
Than, you know, the hairy mud from the original series. And totally that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Back in the 60s one, if I remember correctly, you know, the Harvey Mudd. No, it's Harry Mudd. Is more of like, well, you know, Captain.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of deal, which is very much more tonally cohesive with the 60s campiness of it.
Yeah. Like the penguin from the first Batman or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, okay, so as we said, through each iteration, he kills Lorca multiple times.
He gets further and further into his plot.
Exactly.
Because he's learning more and more.
Yeah, but the thing is that Stamets, who did some bioengineering on himself, who has a now genetic connection with mycelia, Stamets is now also immune to temporal loops. And thus, Stamets also remembers.
He's the one that remembers.
Yeah, so he's basically the hero of this episode, because every iteration through, he's trying, given the very short amount of time, trying to tell Burnham what's going on. We need to fix this. And so he has to refine his process also. And so that's what he does. He gets Burnham to tell him a secret, and that's an efficient way to prove that she told him something in the past.
Can I stop you right there?
Can I pause you right there?
So I pause it again, and I said, and I wrote down in my note that the secret, I didn't get it correctly right.
Okay.
But I wrote down the secret that she kept and has never told anybody else was that she's never been kissed or has fallen in love or been in love with anyone before.
Most impressive.
And I was like, oh, that's got that feeling of like, okay, this is, because it makes sense, right?
She's shown no aptitude or will, like, anything romantic at all. Like, I can't imagine that she's, I never thought that that's what it was. I never thought it'd be like a romantic thing.
Oh, see, that made sense to me. That it was a romantic thing. Because here's this human that is raised on Vulcan and raised with certain values. Mm-hmm. And she is now just learning to embrace her humanity. And she did have a dialogue where she was like, she's asked the question by, I think, Ash Tyler.
Yeah.
Who asked her, as you know, didn't you spend 7 years on the Shenzhou? Didn't you party, fraternize? And she goes, no, that's outside of the realm of my responsibilities, and it's inappropriate to fraternize with officers and stuff like that in that kind of position. That's her choice, obviously. So, yeah, so that made sense to me. I was like, ooh.
I guess, like, for me, though, most of my Vulcan ideas come from T'Pol from Enterprise, and to me, like, Vulcans are ultra pragmatic about partnering up in that way, and I just assumed that she would have the same ideals, and that's why she never brought it up before, is because in her mind she mates every 7 years when she's under Ponfar, whatever it's called.
Yeah, but she doesn't go through Ponfar. She doesn't have that.
But I would think in her, like, mental framework, she would still kind of be on that sort of cycle.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. You think she would take it that she... So you thought she would take it, like, that far?
If even, like subconsciously, like just being growing up in that environment, you know.
Understood. Yeah.
Just like that would just kind of through osmosis. That's what her viewpoints would be.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. So interesting.
But anyway, so they figure out Mud has this crystal. Mud discovers a cache of weapons in Lorca's quarters. He uses those with great delight. They still best him. Burnham ends up besting him by convincing him to think that he's like good to go. He destroys the crystal. Yeah. Once he destroys the crystal, it turns out that he thinks that the Klingons are on the way to take Burnham, but really it's his wife, Mud's wife, and his
girlfriend,
soon to be wife. And her father, and there is a dowry,
yep.
And that's the end of the episode.
That he basically stole from him and is trying to get a far away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously, I truncate a lot of stuff when I do these recaps, but that was it. So, I enjoyed the episode. I did think Mud did a great job. I liked the alien, the Gormagander.
The Gormagander, yeah.
I already told you I don't like the shift in urgency with the Klingon War. But
again,
I'm at peace with it. I still don't like that we don't meet the characters on the bridge. But this one actually referred to it, made a joke about it. So at one point, Mud is threatening everybody, holding them hostage, saying, if you don't start giving me answers, I'm going to start offing people. And he grabs one of the crewmen on the bridge and says, okay, random comm officer, you're next. And to me, that was a joke. That was for me. That was a joke for me because I was complaining about not knowing the characters on the bridge. And
absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's pointed at that, right?
Yeah.
You know, it plays well because, yeah, we don't know the random. He doesn't vote, so neither do we.
Right. Yeah. I would at least like to know if we, I mean, I don't think we know the lady whose head is shaved on the sides.
So I think she, yeah. So I think she's gonna be, I think she's, we're going to get to know her.
And then also...
And she's part of the ensemble.
Yeah, and also like the cyborg lady, the one with like the silver...
Yeah, skin. The Gamora. Yeah, the Gamora.
Is that what they're called?
A character? No, I think I believe I'm referring to... from Guardians of the Galaxy and from Avengers, the Zoe Saldana's sister, Gamora.
Oh, okay.
The one who was... Thanos' daughter.
Spoiler alert.
That is taken apart and put together.
Okay.
I think. Hmm.
Okay.
Oh boy, here come Marvel, angry Marvel fans.
Not me, man. I'm not a Marvel guy.
Stupid so. Co-captain Jason doesn't know what he's talking about.
It's all good. Yeah, so, you know, I thought it was fun. I thought the, you know, one thing that I do like about this show a lot, I don't know if I'll be able to put this into words, but I've told you about this before, with how a lot of modern media, movies, shows, they use like horror elements that when you like step back and look at them, they don't make sense. Like, so in my mind, Harry Potter is the worst offender of this, the movies. So a character will be experiencing something and the music will be very tense and there'll be loud noises and kind of jump scares, like just short of jump scares. But when you like really look back and say like, nothing is happening. There's no threat right now, but like, and not even just saying that 100% as an audience member watching this, it's like the character should know this. They're literally just walking into a room or something, and it's not, it's literally like the storyteller is like afraid to have a moment where there's a lull. And so they have to stuff in suspense. And I just, the reason I bring this up is because I do think that Enterprise did this occasionally where, definitely not to a degree, which I'm explaining, but, they had a little bit of it. And like, in a way it was like Archer. I would always complain about how Captain Archer was always like pissed or angry or like forceful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when you step back. Like,
but you're like, why?
In this moment, like, why?
There's no reason.
This moment doesn't command this level of intensity.
Right.
And so what I like about this show, it has none of that. Everyone's very aware and appropriate for their situation. Like, things are crazy, let's act crazy. Things are normal, we'll act normal. And they don't like violate the rules of like what's normal for every situation, and they're very like smart about it. And so I like that a lot. So anyway, that was it.
So okay, so I don't question you whatsoever. The only reason I'm like in puzzlement, I'm like,
yeah,
I was trying to think of examples of like where there is, it's normal, but they're trying to create the heightened sense of suspense that is to kind of paint a point. Harry Potter, really?
Yeah, I haven't watched those movies in a very long time, but if I do again, I can give you like very specific examples where it takes the tone of a horror movie, but there's nothing scary happening, and it has all the bells and whistles of a jump scare horror scene, but it's literally just absolutely nothing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I'm going to derail us a little bit, and I'm going to take us down this Harry Potter one. Okay. I can see where you're coming from for sure. But do you think that's a decision because that they do it a lot in Harry Potter is because they're kids?
Yeah.
They're, you know, they're the heroes, right, of the story.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're kids and they are in this magical, mystical world. Mm. And do you think they're doing it because of that, or is it
my theory is that the filmmakers don't trust the audience to behave rationally, and they'll get bored or they'll lose focus if there's not like a certain level of suspense or excitement. And so they create fake excitement, fake suspense, because they don't trust the audience's attention span to stay engaged in the absence of it. And I think in the process they do the audience a disservice.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So I think that's
where it comes from. Instead of playing tense music. They should be playing, like, music that kind of hits more of a tonal, like, Harry's wistful in this situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or in, you know, deep thought or process. Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't know if this is the best example, but even in, like, very early in the first movie, when Hagrid first comes...
Oh, my God. First movie. Holy crap. Yeah. Oh, my.
When Hagrid first comes to the, like, island house thing they're staying on, and it's as if a monster is breaking into the house, and it's, like, they're, you know, they're cowering in their little hut, and there's a monster breaking in, and then yeah. Nope, it's just Hagrid. So
but that was the first time they met Hagrid, right?
I mean, not the best example, because it's like kind of like Hagrid's a huge guy and he kind of looks scary
until you meet him,
but it's kind of like that, and there's multiple examples of that throughout the films.
No. I don't question you whatsoever. It's just an interesting to think about, to, like, you know, are they creating it because, you know, is it because they don't trust us to, like, know that this is, they want us to think that this is a tense moment even though it's nothing?
Mm.
Or, you know, interesting.
Yeah. So...
I have to pay more attention to that. I'm going to take that down as a note.
Well, this is... No, it's good because my daughter's actually watching Harry Potter for the first time. So I'll be able to pull out some specific examples.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, false... I'm sure I've seen it and been like, ugh, that wasn't anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I could be wrong. I could be wrong, too. So.
No. Yeah, I mean, maybe. I just, yeah, that, No, it's just something I think about. I'm just, yeah.
Well, so yeah, I would give this episode like a B-.
Okay. What did you think of the time loop sci-fi aspect to it?
At first, I was like, oh, man, this is a gimmick. But then I was remembering somewhere in the far reaches of my memory, there's a Next Generation episode that does something mm-hmm. similar. And yep.
To a degree.
And yeah. I was like thinking that, like, I think in that episode, weren't they near like a black hole or something? Or they were near an anomaly in space.
So, it's been done a couple of times in the Next Generation.
Okay.
Where one of them is that they encounter this very xenophobic species.
Okay.
And Data is programmed to, you know, Data is commanded to not talk about it, because he's the vessel that they communicate through.
Okay.
And Picard orders him, like, they leave too many clues and stuff, and that's why they keep guessing of, like, why did we stop? Because the computer timer's off or whatever the case might be. Or, you know, there were clues that was left over. And then there was another one where they are in a nebula or of some sort. And I believe that this might be the one that you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's a nebula thing, or there's there's a tear in the space-time continuum, and they collide with a starship. With another Federation starship coming from the past.
Oh.
And every time it destroys it, we restart it again.
Okay.
Until they figure out, oh, we have to, you know, make this other move instead of, you know, colliding with, you know, we have to move out of the way or whatever the case might be. And then that stops the loop. So, yeah, they've done it a couple of times in other iterations of Star Trek for sure.
Okay.
And I was going to bring that up too, so.
Oh, all right.
Which is great. Which is great. We're on a roll here. Yeah, we're on a roll here. Yeah. So, yeah, so it's been similar things have been done before. Yeah, this certainly didn't break the, you know, this didn't break anything, you know, new.
Yeah, and then the other thing was I could buy the Burnham secret thing with Stamets and her getting on board. I don't know if I totally bought the final iteration where everyone was on board, especially Lorca.
Oh, like, okay, yeah.
I just can't imagine Lorca so quickly, because it would have to have been ultra fast for them to explain to him and then to him to play this role where they're lying and they're all like on a script lying to Mud. I just didn't quite buy it. So
that's interesting, because if the last episode didn't happen,
mm-hmm.
and in the beginning where he's like, yeah, whatever, take care of the Gormagander, or whatever the case might be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but more so last episode where he's like, hail Starfleet Command, ask them what they want us to do. But then the other component to that is that he knows Harry Mudd, right?
Yeah.
And I think because of that interaction in two or three episodes ago,
Yeah.
And that's where I was like, okay, yeah, I could believe that.
Yeah. It's believable. It's just, I don't know. Like, Lorca, particularly with the PTSD that he was showing, his aggression they're showing.
Yeah.
Like, to me, the believable one is where he's lunging at him and then Mud disintegrates him. Like, that's totally believable. Yeah. But the one where he doesn't, like, he puts his emotions aside and plays along.
Well, that's why I think they needed all three. Because we talk about Stamets and Burnham.
Mm-hmm.
But the third person that really, one, knew Harry Mudd. And I was like, why is Ash Tyler such a critical component to this episode? Not just the love thing between, you know, the infatuation between him and between Burnham and Tyler. But then I was like, oh, okay, it's because he had been in that cell for so long with Mudd,
mm-hmm.
that he picked up on, that you're like, oh, he must have picked up on, he picked up on things.
Yeah, of like, the bank robbery.
How is Mudd able to achieve and accomplish these things? And then we can stop him.
Yeah, like the bank robbery.
Right. Yeah. That to me, I was like, okay, got it. And then when Lorca turns over and says, Captain Mudd, blah, 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 I'm like, all right, that took all three of them to say.
Sure. I think
Mudd is here. He's trying to sell the ship to the Klingons. This is how we stop him.
I think I would have liked it better if Stamets had done the same trick with the others, like getting a secret from each of them.
Oh, so in each jump, you get one from Burnham, one from Tyler, potentially him explaining it to Lorca.
Yeah, a secret from Lorca, a secret from Tyler.
So you would have liked it to be much more of a Stamets episode than a Burnham Tyler episode?
Just as a way to get Lorca and Tyler so quickly on board. If he also did the secret trick with them as well.
Yeah.
And maybe he did and it's just off screen or whatever. But
that's where I thought they were going. Yeah. I thought this was gonna be a Stamets episode. Mm-hmm. not a Tyler Burnham episode.
Yeah.
But I was wrong, obviously.
Well, what'd you think, man?
Because I would have been really interested to see it from... It would have been interesting to see it more from Stamets's point.
Right, yeah.
Of view. Yeah.
What'd you think?
But then you'd have to say, oh, we've seen it like 50 times.
Yeah.
I thought this was a fun episode. You know, a time heist, you know, temporal loop kind of deal. Mm. I was like, okay, this is fun. I thought it was a really good episode. It's more character building. I was surprised at how quickly the writers and producers said, we got to bring back Harry Mudd.
Good point.
I was like, wow, it's been three episodes, and he's back already?
Yeah, it's a good point.
And then now, you know, with this, you know, with being with Stella now, we may not get to see him again anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't expect that, and it was fun, and he's Rainn Wilson brings a really interesting dark dynamic to the character and a new interpretation of the character, which I appreciated. And that part was fun.
Yeah.
But like with you, it was a good episode. I enjoyed it. I would probably give this, like last time, somewhere in between a lieutenant and lieutenant commander's kind of rating, you know, kind of sliding scale more towards in the middle between a lieutenant and, you know, between Worf and Data again.
Yeah. There's nothing. So you're saying two pips and two and a half pips between?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Between
look
that.
Look at me knowing stuff now.
Right? see? Yeah. It was a fun episode. It contributed a little bit to the story, you know, to the overall story, the arc.
Do you think Tyler and Burnham will carry on their romance?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think no.
I was gonna say no. I was gonna land on no. Because I was actually half surprised that they didn't kill him already.
Whoa.
I would have been sad. But I was like, oh, didn't kill him. But, you know.
You think he's marked for death?
No. Just for some reason with Mutt, with this being a Mutt episode, mm-hmm. I was like, they're not killing Lorca. But I could see them offing Tyler.
Oh, okay.
But I'm glad they didn't. Huh.
Okay.
I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Hopefully. So, I'm going to say no. But I think Tyler is going to be a big part after I thought that he was going to be offed, that he's here to stay. And, you know.
Do you think Lorca...
going to be part of the ensemble.
You think Lorca is marked for death?
I do.
I do too.
I do.
If for no other reason, because that's such a renowned actor, I assume he commands a pretty high price tag. Like,
yeah.
Like right when this series started, when we saw Michelle Yeoh, I was like, oh, well, she's dead. Like, she's a massive movie star, right? Well, there's no way she's going to hang around. They're
now,
not going to pay her.
Would she then, though? Like,
oh, I don't know.
In 2017, was she...
I don't know.
I know she is and was a big star,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I know that. Don't I know. Big movie star before, you know, she won the Academy Award. Mm-hmm. But at that point, you're like, Michelle Yeoh, I thought that would have been a pretty cool fit to see her longer.
I just assumed they couldn't afford her for more than an episode
or
two.
Yeah. And that's why I thought they wouldn't kill her, but she would be lost or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they would bring her back as guest cameo. Like, she promoted to Admiral or whatever, and then, you know, taken off the bridge. And then Ryder come in, like, on occasion. Which is what I think they will do with Lorca. I don't know if he's going to be killed. I just think he's going to be lost or something.
Isn't he like a Ray Fiennes, though? Isn't he like a British Royal Academy guy? Or am I way off with that?
Yeah, actor? I don't think he's in that. I mean, is he in the Colin Firth Ray Fiennes?
I thought he was. I don't even know his name.
I mean, I guess he is.
Because, I mean, like, he was in every Harry Potter movie. That alone. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Lucius Malfoy?
Yeah.
Is that his character's name? Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
So Michelle Yeoh was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Right.
That was a massive success.
Yes. Yes.
So he's okay. Jason Isaacs, definitely English.
Yes.
He studied at University of Bristol.
Okay. So doesn't really mean much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just think of. Seems like the. Oh wait a minute. He appeared on stage, Royal National Theater. I don't know. He has a huge, huge resume. So.
Yeah. Most British actors of that hilt,
yeah,
do have like a huge stage and theater.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, so I guess he is. Is he gonna be killed? I don't think so. I don't think he's killed. I think he's. Lost or something. But maybe they do kill Lorca. I don't know.
I think they do.
Okay.
And I think that opens the path for what I assume is Burnham eventually taking the helm. But I don't know. This show definitely is focused on the underdogs. On the... Yeah.
I could see Saru becoming captain first.
See, I think we talked about this before. I think Saru will be offered the job, but then will relinquish his seat and give it to her.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Well, was there anything else with this episode you wanted to talk about?
Nope. Can't think of anything else. I think
we
pretty much covered it. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Any Star Wars news?
Mm.
Anything in the Star Wars universe?
No.
Was there a movie or something that was just recently announced? Or am I making that up? Or a series?
No. No, I think okay. All of Disney's money is going to Marvel right now. So.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, so. Which is good. You know what? I need a Star Wars break, so.
You need a break from Star Wars? Okay.
So. But, okay. We can, you know, it's okay for these to be sub 60 minutes. It's not a problem.
Yeah, no. I don't know. Yeah, I know.
Okay, well. in that case, everybody, thank you for listening. And we have a Patreon. If you join our Patreon for a mere $2 a month, which is basically nothing, you get early access to the episodes, and we will call your name out at the end of our episodes.
Ooh, yeah.
And you'll have our undying gratitude and love and respect, most importantly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and then follow us on Twitter, TikTok, Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
Do we still call it Twitter?
See, I'm surprised I said that because I very intentionally try to call it X.
Oh, okay.
You know what's annoying, funny about that is, so Elon Musk, in interviews, he still calls it...
Still calls it Twitter?
So here's what he does. He says XFKA Twitter. He never...
Holy jeez.
He never...
Wait. Isn't that the name of a music artist?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Or something very similar?
I don't know.
Okay. But, or an actor?
But he never just says X. He says XFKA Twitter. It's like, dude, what are you doing? Why would you do that?
Right.
But for me, I'm trying to be on the vanguard, and I'm always trying to say X. So I'm surprised I just said Twitter. But anyway.
So the first time I saw that, I was like, oh, he's calling it 10.
Yeah. Anyway, follow us on X. And
or 10.
Yeah. Subscribe to us on YouTube, and we appreciate it. And until next time, live long and prosper.
May the force be with you.
See ya.